From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour could be made by the end of this year. That's when the New York Restaurant Association says nearly two-thirds of restaurants in the state could close unless there's some kind of government aid. The association recently conducted a study with more than 1,000 restaurateurs across the state, and nearly 64% said they are likely or somewhat likely to go out of business by the end of this year unless they see financial relief. On Wednesday, restaurants in New York City will be allowed to reopen their indoor dining rooms at 25% capacity. Restaurants in the Finger Lakes region reopened indoor dining at 50% capacity in June. Since the shutdown in March, restaurant owners and staff have been implementing new ideas to maximize business, from making quick switches to takeout to turning parking lots or sidewalks into outdoor dining areas to considering yurts or plastic igloos for the coming months. Owners are getting creative. But for many establishments, it's too late. Technomic, a consulting firm for the restaurant industry, estimates that between 20 and 25% of independently owned restaurants will never reopen. And with the winter months coming and with outdoor dining options becoming more limited or too uncomfortable for customers, the future for these businesses is uncertain. As reported by the president of the New York Restaurant Association, quote, "It is painfully clear that without financial assistance, the restaurant industry in New York State could collapse," end quote. So what's happening here in Rochester? When's the last time you visited your favorite restaurant? What is it doing differently to get through this difficult time? And how do you feel about safety measures? This hour, we discuss the state of the restaurant industry and how it's playing out at the local level. We'll ask our guests what they'd like to see from government leaders, especially as we head into the cold months, and we'll hear from you about your experiences. I'd like to welcome my guests. Lorna Underwood is the owner of Caribbean Heritage Restaurant. Lorna, welcome to you.
Well, thank you. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us. Zuri Brown is also joining us. She's the founder of El Pilon Criollo. Thank you so much for being back, Zuri.
You're welcome.
Also joining us is Chuck Sarankoski. He's the co-owner of Good Luck, Cure, Lucky's, and the Jackrabbit Club, and the director of the Rochester Cocktail Revival. Welcome back to you, Chuck.
Hello. Thanks, Megan. Hello, everybody.
And Melissa Fleischut is joining us. She's the president and CEO of the New York Restaurant Association. Melissa, thanks for taking the time.
Sure. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Melissa, I'd like to start with you and talk about that survey conducted by your association. Again, the specific number is 63.3% of restaurants saying they're likely or somewhat likely to close by the end of the year without some form of financial relief. And as you've said, it paints a pretty dire picture for the industry. Was that number, nearly 64%, what you had anticipated, considering what you've been hearing throughout the last several months?
It was higher than we anticipated, and, you know, we were a little surprised that it was that high. The first survey that we did just a couple weeks before that, we did in early August, talking about whether or not restaurant owners thought they were going to be profitable in the next 6 months, and 90% said that they didn't expect to be profitable in the next 6 months. So that number was so incredibly high, it made us immediately start to think about, well, what does that mean? If they're not profitable, are they breaking even? Are they going to be able to make it? Is it sustainable? How long do they have? So that's what led us to do the second survey within 2 weeks. That number is surprising, 63%, like you said, don't expect to make it without additional financial relief. And that's why we think it's so important for the federal government to act and to provide additional financial assistance to the restaurant industry.
Some of the other data in your survey, I think, is compelling. About 55% of restaurants that are likely to close are expected to shut down before November. And only about 36% of people surveyed said they expect to still be in business by January. What are some of these owners saying, Melissa?
Well, I think you touched on it earlier in that the weather is a concern. So outdoor dining and the expansion of outdoor dining into new locations and new areas that we may have never considered before has been great. And it's been wonderful to have during the good weather of the summer and now into the early fall. But as we all know, the winters are going to be rough here, and it's just going to be a real challenge to try to continue that for much longer. So I think that's part of what you see playing out here into the numbers for September and October closures, before November and December when the weather starts to get really bad. And we did also have New York City operators in that conversation, and they also, you know, at that point did not have a date certain to reopen for indoor. So hopefully, you know, with some of the changes that we've seen in the last few weeks, there will be more ability for some restaurants to continue forward.
Mm-hmm. I know we're talking about restaurants that are currently open and what they're expecting to see in the next couple months, but there are, I'm sure, a number of restaurants that are still closed after they were told to shut down in March. And according to the association, the New York State Restaurant Association, from March 1st to April 16th, 93% of restaurant operators laid off or furloughed workers, and 53% temporarily closed their restaurants. Do we know what percentage of those that temporarily closed are still closed and expect to be permanently closed?
I don't think we do. At this point, the government data that we normally receive is usually on a lag, so I don't think we have good data yet. And I think, especially in New York City, it's been hard to know if those businesses are going to be permanently closed, or were they waiting for indoor dining to open or a certain capacity to open. So I don't think we're there yet on hard numbers as to what we're actually going to see permanently closed for the industry.
Mm-hmm. I think these numbers are important, and they paint a picture for us to examine. But we should also keep in mind, we're talking about people who are pouring their lives into these businesses, people that have, you know, sacrificed so much, like our guests, Lorna, Zuri, and Chuck, who are joining us today. So I want to make sure during this conversation that even though we're talking about numbers, there are humans behind this. We're talking about personal stories and people that are affected. And that's why I'm so grateful to have all of you with us today, because this community, it's important for us to understand what's going on both here and then beyond. And before we turn to our restaurant owners locally, a few more questions for you, Melissa, because there's new data out from the CDC about indoor dining or restaurant dining. A CDC study released earlier this month showed adults who tested positive for the coronavirus were about twice as likely to have dined at a restaurant within a two-week period prior to becoming sick. And researchers said it was mainly because masks are not effectively worn while eating or drinking, air circulation issues, direction, ventilation, intensive airflow affecting virus transmission. I'll say the study has some limitations. So listeners, if you're hearing this, don't just think, oh, indoor dining is bad, we cannot dine indoors. That's not what we're trying to communicate. The study was pretty small, and people who filled out that poll were not asked to distinguish between outdoor and indoor dining. But it does echo some overall concerns. So, Melissa, several listeners have asked, you know, should I hold off a little bit considering this new information? Or what kinds of advice would you give people who are considering dining, either indoors or outdoors?
Well, I think the first thing I would take away from the study is that the people who had dined out in the last 2 weeks and had tested positive were probably more willing to be taking risks and doing activities that would be considered higher risk. So I think you should take that into consideration. And it didn't say that they traced back their exposure to COVID to a restaurant. So I think that's important to note as well. But for those listeners out there who are maybe uncomfortable going out or have a high risk and are concerned about, you know, being inside a restaurant, there's lots of options. Delivery and takeout is still, you know, a very viable solution. And outdoor dining, as long as we can have it, is still a great solution. But indoors, I would just say, you know, I think that there's a lot that the restaurant industry does on a normal day, complying with health department guidelines. We're now complying with CDC guidelines. We have state regulations. There's a lot of things that we're doing to keep everyone safe and healthy inside those restaurants. And I think mask wearing is important. And, you know, I think it's a great idea if people want to leave those masks on until their food is served. That's a great way to, you know, just be supportive of the wait staff and the people in the restaurant. And that limits, you know, everyone's exposure if they're keeping their masks on.
Thank you for that. I know that our restaurant owners will have a lot to say about safety measures they are taking and any special protocol that they've enforced, and we'll talk to them in just a moment. But before we get a sense of what's happening at those individual establishments, Melissa, your organization looks at the restaurant industry across the state. What have you learned about Rochester and the Finger Lakes specifically when it comes to either the study itself that your organization pushed forward or any other data that you think is important for our listeners to hear?
I don't think that we've really drilled down too much to the specific area. Like you said, we are a statewide organization, and we tend to look at the numbers across the state. Again, some great numbers in the Finger Lakes from what we've seen. You know, everybody's doing a great job keeping the infection rate down. And we've heard a lot of good stories about creativity for outdoor dining there in that region specifically, since they were one of the leaders that got to open up first. So in general, I mean, I think it's been going pretty well. Everybody had some rough spots when it first started, and that was more of a learning curve for both the restaurant operator and for the guest coming in. You know, everybody needed to learn what the new rules were and to get used to them, but I think we're there. I think we've done a good job getting out all that information and getting everybody comfortable with the new rules to dining out at this point.
Well, my very unscientific poll that I posted on Twitter over the weekend, just asking listeners in our community to weigh in about what types of establishments they've been to, what that experience has been like. The overwhelming majority of people who responded said that they were pretty happy with how things were going. They felt safe. They named some places that we can discuss later in the hour. But I didn't see anything that was of major concern. There is an email I'll read later in the hour about mask wearing, but on the whole, it seemed pretty positive, and I think that's reflective of what people like Lorna and Zuri and Chuck are doing. And I'd like to turn to them now. Chuck, walk me through what happened with your restaurants, beginning with the shutdown in March. So again, Chuck Sierankowski is the owner of Good Luck, Cure, and Lucky's, and the Jackrabbit Club. I'm sure you have lots to talk about, Chuck. So take us through what happened, beginning with what happened in March.
Right on. Well, in March, there was a Thursday, I think it was the 12th, the governor limited capacity. And then that Friday, we saw sales decline rapidly, reservations get canceled, guest attendance plummet over the weekend. And by Monday, we were told to close for in-service dining. My history might be a little bit off, but it was a tight turnaround of a couple of days that suddenly restaurants were designated as essential. And then our organization quickly pivoted to really not interrupt business at all. We took it as a responsibility to make sure the lights stayed on for our staff's job's sake, and we kept going right through. So there was a lot of, the guest from the restaurant association, as she pointed out so accurately, there were some rough patches at the start, but we right away in all three of my dining concepts pivoted to offering takeout in various forms right away, and then expanded on that as the weeks went on. Really, the almost one of the senses of fatigue, and I think you, Megan, you also touched on this, reminding everyone listening, thankfully, that there are humans attached to all of this. None of it is easy to completely rewire your business quickly. And I can speak for myself by thanking my incredible staff and team of employees for being so acrobatic and agile in all of the work necessary to basically tailor our business suddenly to have a completely changed model. But we got creative along the way and pushed through. But the fatigue of constantly seeing the foundation of your business changing, coupled with the fact that you're really not making any money for the effort, got to be a lot and continues to be a lot.
Did you have to lay off any staff or furlough anyone, Chuck?
We effectively laid off or furloughed most of our staff that were not managers at at every one of our concepts. Again, you know, that could be a whole nother program, 2 hours long, but we did furlough and lay off staff. They have all come back. I would say 95% of staff has come back across the board. So again, you know, if we all remember this, I don't know to anyone listening or anyone participating, if it seemed to you like it, you know, at first, I don't know, was it going to last 2 weeks, a month? You know, now we're 6 months into it. But we were all, it was a quick decision to say, okay, look, we've got to take action. Fortunately, at the beginning, those layoffs and furloughs were bolstered by the unemployment insurance that everyone already pay, a system everyone pays into. And obviously that becomes a longer conversation or a bigger conversation about, some of the pros and cons of that, but we fortunately saw our staff taken care of by unemployment for the most part, and then slowly brought them back, you know, by June.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the fatigue of the business changing, and I don't know if you think that fatigue will go away anytime soon, because we're living in this evolving situation. We don't know what the winter will look like. What kinds of creative ideas do you have, those that you can reveal at this stage, about how to navigate the cold and how to navigate not being able to probably do as much outdoor dining as you're doing now? I know at Good Luck you have that outdoor space in the garden that seems to be pretty popular every time I drive by there or walk by there. But what are you thinking about in the months ahead?
So one, no one has ever done this before. No leader, no government leader, no business owner, no employee. We've never seen something like this touch on it or affect an industry so much. So first of all, offering outdoor dining was the biggest facilitator of outdoor dining this summer was the fact that this summer had to have the nicest weather in this region that I can remember. You know, it rains here. Sometimes it's too hot. Wasps. I mean, you know, all these things can be effective. So we, you know, that worked. What it also will universally affect us, or as you said, of course, will be the cold. I don't know for everybody what the solution is, because it's different place by place. And I'm getting to my point. I'm sorry, but there's what works even for us, even within our four restaurants or four venues, is just, it's very specific to each venue, what we have available. So Good Luck is adjacent to our event space. So it's not super convenient, but we have a little more space to expand to when we lose outside. Lucky's has an upstairs room that we're renovating to allow additional dining. Cure is going to suffer by having just less people inside of it. It's small and it'll lose outside and there's really nothing we can do. But the point in with the fatigue is not a hopeless one. The fatigue is, I would almost say, weariness from a hard, you know, from the weariness that comes from a lot of work. You have to get through it. This doesn't just affect us now. It's not something that happened. It's something that's happening. It's something that's ongoing for an indeterminate amount of time. And you have to push through it. You have to find solutions, and there's hope. And the thing to really be thankful for and remember, because we are part of the hospitality business, is the fact that guests still come in. And some guests, you know, we don't force you to come into a restaurant. It's not the DMV. This is not something that you have to do once in a while. If you never feel safe going to a restaurant before COVID or after COVID, you don't have to come in. But when you get here, we're thankful for you. And I think that has to be remembered too. So many people have participated in the takeout programs and have participated in the indoor dining, that there is hope. You're going to make it. You know, it's going to be tough, but we're going to do what we need to do to make it and keep as many jobs as we can.
That was another question I have for all of our restaurant owners, just what you're hearing from customers. The feedback that I've been reading on Twitter is, I'm so grateful that there are takeout options or curbside pickup. I'm grateful they've stayed open. I know varying degrees of difficult for different restaurants, different situations. But Chuck, what is the overall message you've been hearing from customers at Good Luck, Here Luckies, and the Jackrabbit Club?
Overall, that guests appreciate us being there. They thank us for being available. You know, you have to remember that this affects everyone. So sometimes, you know, eating dinner at a restaurant or even a slightly fancy one like mine is not essential. Eating is essential. Eating there is not. But you also can't go to a play. I don't know. Can you go to a movie theater? Do you want to? I don't know. A concert. You can't do those things. So this provides that respite for folks. It's a night out. It is entertainment. We have gotten some criticism, as we should. Restaurants, if you can't take criticism, you shouldn't be in the restaurant business. But we have gotten some criticism. There's been nights when capacity or the push on capacity has caused us to adjust our policies and make sure that we're abiding not only by guidelines, but to make sure guests are comfortable. And some people have let us know, but I have to say most people are reasonable. Those that are, I can honestly tell you, I've written off some folks that decide to use Yelp to tell me how the COVID pandemic is ruining their life. But most people are very gracious and understanding. And if we're not doing it the best way, they'll let us know and we'll adjust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now is, I think, a time for patience. And I was talking to a friend a week ago about just how heated, angry emails can make you feel. I mean, we see them here on this program occasionally. And I really hope that, as you mentioned, Chuck, if people are receiving criticism, everyone is learning during this situation. It's evolving. There's no perfect solution. And I think if we take that approach of, okay, I was unhappy with X, Y, Z. I want to express it. Here's, you know, why it made me upset. Here are my concerns and suggestions. It's so much more productive than just lashing out. We're all doing the best we can. So I'm happy to hear that people have largely been patient and understanding. And Lorna Underwood, I hope the same goes for you too, the owner of Caribbean Heritage Restaurant. Where can we find Caribbean Heritage?
Caribbean Heritage Restaurant is at 719 South Plymouth Avenue in the city. We opened a year ago in March, and then we flatlined in March of this year because of COVID. We went from having bustling in people coming in to just totally having to close. We had to close. We just started the restaurant business. This is new to us, so we just closed and just reorganized. We didn't have to lay anybody off, which was great. And we had to organize. We were closed for 2 weeks just to, you know, see how we can do this without making sure everybody's comfortable coming in, as well as making sure our employees are safe. So we just closed, and we're doing takeouts, and we're still doing takeouts. We're up to right now, we're about 25% capacity. We're slowly, you know, we're going to do it slowly in terms of dining in just because of the uncertainty of COVID. So we're going to continue on that road and see, you know, at what point we'll be able to open at 50% or above. So right now where we are right now, we're like 23% down from sales, you know, because of COVID, because of all the unrest, because of, you know, there are lots of factors right now that's causing us to, you know, not be at where we should be or where we would like to be in sales.
Do you feel the fatigue that Chuck mentioned about constantly having to re-envision what your business like might look like and not really having any solutions about when this pandemic might end?
Yes, every day, every night, we're thinking about what can we add? What can we do to make it, you know, people more receptive? But as far as the COVID goes, that the uncertainty of that is right in the forefront of everybody's mind, because we are leery about our safety of our customers and safety of our employees and ourselves as well. So it's really a challenge right now.
What worries you the most, Lorna, whether it comes to the business itself or COVID? You have a lot on your plate. You're grappling with a lot. What is the biggest concern at this stage?
Biggest concern is, how will COVID affect us? Will we be able to stay open in months to come? That's the biggest concern. You know, how will COVID affect us in December or in October? That's my biggest COVID is my big concern for my customers, for my, because if I don't have customers, I won't have a business. Mm-hmm. So that is my greatest concern.
Have you started thinking about the months ahead and any kind of creative ways to keep things going and maybe new directions? Or I know that you may not have the space for a greenhouse like or an igloo like they're doing in New York City. Many establishments here don't. But is there anything that you've been considering that might ease the process?
Where our restaurant is small, and we try very hard to keep everything sanitized. However, we're still thinking, what can we do? We're thinking of other ways, but nothing specific as yet. We're mm-hmm. definitely thinking of what can we do to, we're talking about maybe sometimes doing, having an event, but it's going to be still takeout. But make it more event, like my husband is from Antigua, the Independence is coming up in November. We'll maybe try to have an event just to celebrate Antigua, but we'll have to do it in a takeout style. And so many people, maybe 10 people at a time, come in to get the meals. So we're trying, you know, come up with other ideas as to how we can keep going.
I know your background is in catering, Lorna. Does that come in handy in a situation like this where you've been forced back into takeout for chunks of the year? Do you find that having that experience is making things a little easier?
We are getting some catering, not a lot. Right now we're working with the city with their lunch and dinner program for seniors. We've gotten a grant from them, which has been helpful, where we deliver dinners and lunches to seniors 60 and older if they live in the city. And that's through the city with different restaurants, and we were chosen as one of them. So that's been helpful. The Black Young Professionals, they did Black Restaurant Week, and that was helpful, you know, to keep us going. And we've gotten some grants from Urban League and another grant from the city. So those have been helpful in keeping us afloat. And I just want to thank them for, you know, being available to us. I thank the city. I thank the Young Black Professionals, Urban League. I thank them all. And in terms of thanking people, my staff, they are amazing because, you know, we're like a family and we work together. I thank my sister and my brother-in-laws for helping me out when I need help. So it's been tough, but we keep going. We're going to keep going. Mm-hmm. Because people are still coming. People are still calling for our food. So we're going to keep going.
What have you heard from customers? I know Chuck mentioned there has been a little criticism, but people have been also very positive and grateful. What have you been hearing at Caribbean Heritage?
We've been hearing that they're glad that we're still open because they love our food. And people who come in who are concerned, when they, you know, air their concerns, we try to fix it. People who come in who try to come in without masks, we tell them, no, you have to stand at the door. We take a mask to them so they can come in and enjoy the food. So it's been pretty good. We haven't had any bad experiences, I must say.
Good, good. Remind our listeners where we can find Caribbean Heritage.
We are at 719 South Plymouth Avenue in the city, right close to the Broad Street Bridge that takes you over to Mount Hope. It's really a great restaurant. We have lots of great Caribbean food. We have an Instagram page if you want to get on Our Caribbean Heritage, and Facebook at caribbeanheritage.net. So you can, that's our website as well, Caribbean Heritage, as well as the Facebook page, which is very active. So yeah, we're hanging in there. We're going to hang tough to see where, and see where it takes us.
Well, we're getting some emails from listeners saying this conversation is making me hungry. We are in the lunch hour. So, hey, if you're hearing about some new places that you haven't been yet in Rochester, we're glad to highlight those for you. And another one is LP Lone Criollo. Zuri Brown is joining us. She is the founder. Welcome back to the program, Zuri. How are you today?
I'm good and happy to be part of this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Tell us how things went for you and your team beginning in March once the shutdown happened.
I started hearing about the COVID back in December. I was kind of waiting to see what was going to happen. We closed our doors on March 16. There was not a lot of information. Everybody was scared about what was going to happen. So we closed in, I decided to close in March 16, and we were closed for 2 months. Mm-hmm. We were closed to, you know, just waiting for guidance and information about what we needed to do. Our restaurant is really small. We only have seating for about 20 people. And a lot of it is takeout. So it was just not having all that information and not knowing how we were going to keep ourselves safe and our customers, you know, the employees and the customers safe.
Did you have to lay anyone off or furlough any staff, sir?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My employees were able to, they were able to do the unemployment. They received unemployment for the time that we were closed.
So you opened back up in May for...
May 19th.
Great, for takeout. Mm-hmm. How was the response?
Customers?
Yes, customer response to being back open,
yeah,
having takeout.
We were... They are happy that we are open. It's still a lot of people wanting to come in with no mask. Mm. Or, you know, they don't... Some of them don't want to wait. They don't want to do the social distancing. And talking about fatigue, yeah, we deal with that every day because we are trying really hard to keep ourselves healthy and do the same for our customers. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's hard, yes.
When people come in and they want to come in and they're not wearing masks, how do you handle those situations?
Well, I have a big sign that says, if you don't have a mask, we're not going to be able to serve you. They still want to come in without a mask, so we just say, you know, we cannot serve you, and they leave, you know, they leave, and sometimes they have they come back like 2 minutes later, they forgot it at the car or something, but out of five, I would say three will come back with their mask on.
I think sometimes mm-hmm. we just forget. There are a couple times I've been halfway through a grocery store parking lot and realize, oh, shoot, I left it in the car. It feels so strange when that happens.
But for
people who may be a little more resistant to putting one on, going back to the car, getting it, and you say, I'm sorry, I can't let you in. This is our policy. How do they respond? Are they angry? Do they say they understand? Maybe that's too optimistic of a question, but how does that go?
I would say they get angry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's new to all of us, you know, now getting used to wearing a mask everywhere. You know, you go grocery shopping, you have to wear a mask.
Mm-hmm.
People are not smiling anymore. You know, you don't talk to people like you used to. You don't get, you know, close to people. So it's all new and different and scary too, you know.
It must be mm-hmm. especially difficult for a restaurant like yours that prides itself on family, like Lorna's does as well. Many, I'm sure Chuck, his staff feels like family when you're not able to provide the service that you're used to providing and having the interaction with regular customers that you may want to have. I mean, what does that feel like? Or what are you looking forward to in the next couple months? Or what are you worried about in that terms?
I was thinking about ideas of what I can do, you know. But it's just the uncertainty of it, you know. I was talking to a friend of mine about maybe getting opening a window so people can do just drive through. Because I said, like I said, our space is really small. So how are we going to be able to social distance if they're waiting in line? You know, how many people can be in one? Who's going to control who comes in? You know, that's like an extra person that you need just to manage the door. So those are things that I've been thinking about and trying to find solutions by talking to people that I know in the city or people that I have worked before.
I know that our restaurant owners on the panel and Melissa from the New York Restaurant Association, they have specific ideas about what they'd like to see from government and the community, whether it's state, local, federal. So we're going to go into that in our next section of the program. We'll take our short break. And we'll also, when we come back, listeners, hear from you about your experiences, any questions you have, anything that you think stands out, positive or negative, about dining out, doing takeout. There's a lot to discuss. You can call the program. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI. That's 263-9994. You can email the program at connections@WXXI.org. And you can find me on Twitter at MMacMedia. So short break, more with our guests next. Coming up in our second hour, we talk about how to help people who struggle with mental health issues or substance abuse disorders as we head into the cold months of the pandemic. Isolation and loneliness are contributing factors to those issues. So how can we help people who may need extra support or connection? The team at East House is preparing for a virtual event to address those questions. But first, we discuss them on Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. You are listening to Connections. We're talking with local restaurant owners and the president and CEO of the New York Restaurant Association about a new survey that the association released, which indicated that nearly two-thirds of restaurants in the state could close by the end of this year unless there's some kind of government aid. Our guests are Lorna Underwood, owner of Caribbean Heritage Restaurant, Zuri Brown, the founder of El Pilon Criollo, Chuck Sarankoski, co-owner of Good Luck Cure, Lucky's, the Jackrabbit Club, and director of the Rochester Cocktail Revival, and Melissa Flyshute, president of this and CEO of the New York Restaurant Association. I'd like to ask our guests to comment on an email we received from a listener who wishes to remain anonymous. And this goes back to the conversation we were just having about masks and mask wearing. And this listener says, since March, we've been ordering out from small local restaurants when we can support them. Now that things have opened up more, we are often doing pickup instead of curbside or delivery, which means we now see the behind the scenes of what's really going on, COVID regulation wise. We noticed two places we frequently ordered from are not adhering to mask mandates. Kitchen staff with no masks to be seen or around their chins. Front of house staff was no different, no masks or around chins. A third, a new place we also tried, we saw cooks, customers, and behind-the-counter staff without masks. At one place, I did bring this concern up with a manager and was simply told, quote, I'm sorry you feel that way, end quote. Unfortunately, it's not a feeling, and although it's now law that it's required, I apologize. Unfortunately, it's not a feeling, this listener says, and it's now a law. It's required by the state. Aside from choosing to just not order from these places in the future, I'm wondering what else I should do. Do I go as far as to report them? If someone gets sick, doesn't one restaurant who isn't following the rules ruin it for others? So that's from a listener. Melissa, I'll start with you. What would you tell this listener?
Yeah, this has been a tough one for our member restaurants and even our non-members that have been communicating with us during this time frame. They don't like tattling on each other. They don't want to report someone to the state because there's so much at stake as far as losing your liquor license or being shut down as a business. But the listener's right. I mean, there's health concerns here that have implications for the community, the staff, the owner, operator. It's a tough spot for someone to be in to decide what to do. I think it was great that the listener tried to address it with the owner-operator. It's unfortunate that the owner-operator didn't want to adhere to the guidelines and the rules. And I know there is a growing frustration out there that those good operators that are adhering to all the rules may lose customers that don't feel that they want to comply, and that's a tough spot to be in. Probably the best thing to do, though, is to, you know, keep everyone safe and protect everyone, and you know, they have to decide if they're willing to take that step and report them.
Mm-hmm. Chuck, what would you tell this listener?
I would tell this listener that, you know, first of all, if you were one of my guests, that I would hear your concern. I can tell you there's probably a slight, you know, frustration some operators have because there is a lifeguarding that goes on here. And this is not at all to discredit what the listener's concerns are, but with a large staff and, you know, many days or many hours working, can you find someone, you know, breaking the mask rule, or is it below the nose? Sure you can. However, as an operator, your responsibility right now is to make sure that your staff wears that thing, that you wear it when you're the owner walking around or walking in, that the kitchen is wearing it in the back. It's part of the process. There's not an excuse for not doing it. Melissa from the Restaurant Association touched on this earlier. Restaurants adhere to guidelines that would knock your socks off if you saw what we have to worry about to keep you safe on any weekend. We're talking about making sure food is not spoiled, avoiding foodborne illnesses, et cetera, et cetera. You know, hairnets, uniforms, closed-toe shoes, this is part of the uniform. You wear the mask. It's part of what we have to do. I don't know that I can advise. It's part of your personal ethics if you think that you should report the restaurant. The problem I have with that is, or I guess the issue I have with that is, what I see from, I'm not going on like an anti-government sort of rant here, but I am going to say that right now it seems like the state of New York for our region likes to brag a little bit more about the places they've shut down than send any guidance back as to what we should do. My colleagues in the restaurant business from the other restaurants on the call mentioned having uncertainty or just having patience and waiting to see what the regulations are. We haven't had any formal update as to what phase we're going to be in months or what the next step is, I guess. So if anything would happen, it would be nice for all of us to come together and know that, like, while like rules are going to lapse unless people see some sort of hope and way out of this. And what the government isn't saying is being filled in with articles speculating about how bad this can be, which is damaging in its own way. But, you know, if your personal ethics wants to report a restaurant, you do have the community to think about. You've already tried to patronize twice. You've already tried to go back and forth, or go back and maybe you talk to the manager. So that's definitely laudable. You've done the right thing. I do have to say though, I wish that to partner with us that some of the other players in this, which would include the government, and then some of the media angles reporting on this, would support the efforts to solve this from a society perspective instead of a lifeguard perspective.
Well, you bring up some good points, and let's talk about that government guidelines or assistance right now. As Zuri mentioned, they spent 2 months waiting for guidelines from the state, and that was a frustrating experience. So, Melissa, I just want to ask you, what is the New York State Restaurant Association asking for in terms of aid or guidance from the federal government? Because I know there's an organized effort to try to secure some relief.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're, you know, breaking this out into each level of government and what they can actually do to help restaurants. So based on what we know of the situation here in New York State with the budget and the lack of funding that the state has and their need for funding from the federal government, we're not asking the state for financial relief. We're going to the federal government. So the federal government has, you know, previously done several COVID packages where they offered the payroll protection program money and then the EIDL loans. So we've been asking for months now that they consider additional funding, whether it's through the EIDL program. We've asked for a specific restaurant fund to deal with just the losses to the restaurant industry, which are astronomical across the country, additional PPP money, allowing people to use it for a second round, really any type of grant program that they want to create and develop and come up with will be grateful to have. Loans are especially tricky because there's, like everyone on this call has said, there's especially a lot of uncertainty as to what the industry is going to look like and who's still going to be here 6 months, 12 months from now. So paying back a loan, taking on additional debt is not a great solution for us, but grant programs would be ideal.
Zuri, do you feel forgotten by state or local or federal government when it comes to this issue?
Well, I was able to get the payroll protection loan with Small Business Administration. I was able to get a grant from the UVMB in the city of Rochester. Mm-hmm. What I'm afraid, because I'm not used to getting things for free, I'm afraid that sooner or later we're all going to have to pay back all this. So the thought about that is got, you know, having more debt is kind of, worrisome to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, in our last few minutes of the program, we'll address more of those issues and also some listener comments. And the first comes from a fan of Caribbean Heritage Restaurant, and it's Tom in Brighton. Go ahead, Tom. You there, Tom?
Rochester, and Lorna is a fantastic cook, and I suppose we have her husband to thank for the vegetarian options on the menu, but it's just terrific. I wanted to say that. But I've got a couple other points I'd like to mask, I'd like to make. One is about masks. I went to get some takeout the other day at a local restaurant that I won't name, and as I was waiting for it, the owner and one of the cooks came through the swinging doors, pulled his mask up as he was coming out, didn't have a mask on back in the food prep area. I could see through the door four or five employees, none of whom had their masks on. And I tried to keep it light, said something to him. He said, "We're doing our best." Complaining about the government, as one of your guests just did in response to a question about masks, really is inadequate and off the point. But the third thing I wanted to say was, I wanted to make reservations this week, and I was looking at three of our higher-end restaurants in Rochester that advertise outdoor seating. None of them would take reservations for outdoor seating. They would only take reservations for indoor seating, and they said you could express a preference for outdoor once you got there. I didn't make reservations at all. I don't know why they're doing it that way. I suppose there's a good reason for it, and your guests would probably know why they wouldn't do it that way.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Let's turn that over to our guest who is offering outdoor seating. I don't know which restaurant Tom is talking about, but Chuck, can you answer his question?
I sure can. The reason that we ask that you make a reservation with a request to sit outside is because we have this thing called rain that sometimes falls from the sky. I'm not being sarcastic, but it's explained on our websites that that is the reality. I know every restaurant has to sort of take that risk. If we put you outside, we cannot promise it won't rain, so we have to give you a backup spot. It's your choice, of course. If you put in that request and understand that the restaurant was going to try to sit you outside, that maybe you shouldn't go out to eat tonight if you don't want to sit inside because you can't sit outside. But that's probably why.
All right, here's an email from Dorothy who wants to share some information about tipping. She says, "Please, please remind listeners to tip staff when they are getting takeout. They work just as hard when serving restaurants inside. Please be kind, tip, and tip well, at least 20% if you are able." That's from a retired server named Dorothy. Lots of love for the local restaurant industry on Twitter. A shout out to the Gatehouse for their top-notch cleaning and disinfecting process from Jane. Lots of love for the meat vending machine at McCann's Meats. So lots of tweets about that. A very creative way to keep things going. Some love for good luck. Adrian says, Swiftwater Beer has an amazing online ordering system and drive-through pickup, plus great food and beer. The list goes on and on. We could do hours. Lots of love for Avino as well. A colleague was telling me this morning that they hand you a piece of paper to read about protocol at Avino, and she received that when she was there recently. So I think what we're gathering from all this feedback, if I'm doing my best to summarize it, is that people are feeling really grateful for the safety protocols that are put in place. Very few concerns about masking, at least in this feedback and outside of that one email we received. But again, this is on everyone. This is on everyone to keep each other safe. And we don't know how long we're going to be in this situation, so it's best if we can all work together. We're down to our last minute or so on the program, so I just want to give each of our guests maybe 10, 15 seconds to talk about your message for the community. I'll start with you, Lorna. What do you want people to know?
I want people to know that we are still open. We are open Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. We're at short hours from 12 to 7. And we definitely will try to do our best to keep our mask on because it's important, as I said, secure us as well as our customers. And we do give them masks when they come in. If they do not have one, we ask them to step outside and we give them a mask. So I just want to tell them, we thank everybody who has patronized our restaurant. We appreciate you. And please continue to come. We need you.
Great. We're tighter on time than I expected. Zuri Brown, quick. Where can we find El Pilo and Criollo?
We are located at 973 North Clinton Avenue. Doing the same, trying to keep ourselves
great
and our customers healthy, and that we are doing our best
great
every day.
Thank you. And you can find Chuck Sarankoski at Good Luck Cure Luckies and the Jackrabbit Club, Melissa Fleischut, the president and CEO of New York Restaurant Association. Thank you all so very much. Good luck.